All right. Good to see you guys this morning. We've got a lot to do, a lot to get into, a lot of things I'm actually really excited about, things to share with you in regards to the church. So if you want, let's just pray and we'll get after it. Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right. Father, thank you for this time, this moment, this privilege that we have to be together. To discover anew who you are, your greatness, your glory, your majesty. Lord, do something fresh, do something real, do something transforming inside each of our hearts, each of our souls. Help us to see that we were made for you. And we'll never find rest, as Augustine said, until we find our rest in you. But we ask this not that simply that we'll walk out of here happier, although that's the case, Lord, but for your great glory and your great namesake, that we might reflect your value to a watching and desperate world. Amen. Amen. I don't know if you found yourself in the same place last week, but I was transfixed the night of the election, around 11:30 at night, when all the news stations and outposts began to focus on Hyde Park in Chicago. Something inside of me just became glued to what was happening and what was unfolding. And just for some of you, you can let the hair on your neck settle down. I'm not going to talk about politics. But there was something happening that night in that place and at that moment. There was something of a greater magnitude than our presidential election that was taking place. There was something changing in the fabric of our country, in the fabric of our nation, and in the generation we find ourselves in. And for whatever your politics are, on one hand, I was watching it proud, you know, as a citizen and as an American and as a Southerner, to have been in a time and in a place to see one of the greatest and darkest and deepest and ugliest barriers that still exist in our culture take at least a monumental step forward towards some measure of reconciliation, where we actually have a president who, to some degree, was not judged negatively because of the content or the color of his skin, but you know what will remain to be seen of the content of his character is up for the next 4 years and possibly eight. But there was something going on in that moment that I think captured the hearts and captured the imaginations and captured the spirit of an entire people. And as I watched that crowd, I couldn't help but get caught up in what was going on. All these hopes and all these expectations and all these anticipations and all these excellencies being proclaimed about this man who was to lead a people and a nation out of darkness. And my mind couldn't help but get caught up with it and then run to Peter's letter to the church. And as I listened to the commentators and I listened to the people and I heard their hopes and their dreams and so much weight and so much riding on this one man for the deliverance and the reconciliation, the transformation of a people, I couldn't help but think of this. And Peter was writing to the church and he said, "You're a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession," talking about Jesus, "that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you're God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." And Peter's writing to the church about their identity and about this man Jesus, and I began to watch a people hungry for something, hungry for someone to come and to lead them out of a darkness and out of a situation, out of a circumstance that they had found themselves hopeless to deal with and sensing as a larger people, as a nation, hopeless to deal with. And I heard people and listened to people proclaim the excellencies of this man, and I couldn't help but think, we're the church. We are the church. The biblical word ecclesia, out of two words, kaleo, to be called and ek out. We are a people called out of something by God. Peter even said it. We have been called out of darkness by Jesus to proclaim the excellencies of his nature and his character. And I had to think, did we miss it? I mean, are we missing it somewhere? I mean, it is so much hope, so much anticipation, so much expectation being put on this one man, people absolutely uninhibited and free to put all of their future, all of their dreams, every expectation they have for their family on this one man. And here we are, a people bought with the body and the blood of the one who created this very thing. And the one who gave himself up to come into this place and reconcile us to himself by giving up his own life. And he has called us out of darkness, out of these circumstances, out of these situations, that we might live in such a way to proclaim his excellencies to a watching world. And I thought we've missed it somewhere. What is it we've failed? What is it we failed to get? What is it that I failed to get? What is it that doesn't wake me up in the morning with a hope and an excitement and anticipation, with an eagerness to cast all of my dreams and all of my faith and all of my hope onto this man, Jesus. You know, we're wired with this taste, this desire, this frequency for transcendence, for something that's greater and bigger than ourselves. And if you were watching things on Tuesday night, what you saw was people tapping into something where they became a part of a movement, a part of a people, a part of something that was bigger than themselves. And for just a moment, and maybe for some, for a series of moments until this poor man lets them down, they felt like they were a part of something that could actually make a difference. And here we are as the church, called out by God for himself, a part of the only thing, Jesus Christ, a part of the only thing that can bring any sort of real redemption and transformation to not only our lives or to our circumstances or to our families, but to a world, to a city, to a nation, and to nations all around. And I don't know, do we sense it? Do we get it? I was reading one of my favorite authors, Paul Tripp. I hope in time he becomes one of your favorite authors. I'll try to get as much of his stuff in your hands as I can, but he wrote a book called The Quest for More, talking about this wiring for transcendence, this wiring for something bigger, this wiring for something greater. And he said, it's this feeling of being part of something significant, of your place and your part actually mattering. For a moment, your life seems bigger than your life. This bigger thing yanks you out of bed, and sometimes the excitement of it all makes it hard to sleep. It makes all of the little things you do every day seem more satisfying and more important, because they're now connected to something more than self-survival. You've experienced a bit of transcendence. And there's woven inside each of us a desire for something more, a craving to be a part of something bigger, greater, and more profound than our relatively meaningless day-to-day existence. We weren't simply constructed to live for ourselves. We were placed on the earth to be a part of something bigger than the narrow borders of our own survival and our own little definitions of happiness. We were created to be a part of something so big, so glorious, so far beyond the ordinary, that it would totally change the way we approach every ordinary thing in our lives. We were called out of something to God, that we might exist to proclaim the excellencies of him who came and who rescued us and who drew us out of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. We were created by God to be the church, a people redeemed by his mercy for his glory, that we might reflect that in our lives, that the way that we live together, the way that we live with others, the way that we love others, the way that we serve others, the way that we serve one another, the way that we honor God with who we are and all that we are, that we would reflect his worth, that we would reflect his wisdom, that in our lives together and individually in the places that God has put us, we would reflect the wisdom of God that said, here's my plan for changing this world. I am going to redeem a people for myself, and through them, I'm going to reflect how great I am. This is my wisdom. We are to reflect that wisdom and that greatness to a watching world. It is a call, it is a mission, it is a purpose that is so much greater than anything that we could individually or collectively just put our hands to without him. He has called us to himself to reflect his greatness, and he has called us to a dependence upon him to do that that is second to none. It goes and it transcends anything that we could define in our own narrow worlds that would bring us any measure of joy or any measure of happiness. It transcends all of that. And so as I thought about that Tuesday night, and I thought about what was stirring inside of me, and I thought about what God's doing in this place, and not just in here, like we talked about last week, but in this people, in this church, in this group of people that he has called out for himself and that he is doing a work in. I thought about all of that, and I thought about it. I thought, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss it. To be the church is to be a part of one of the most transcendent things that has ever or will ever exist. And I think, like we talked about last week, when we dismiss the nature of the church and God's purpose for the church, we begin to minimize the value of the church. And we find it oftentimes, like we do with Jesus, something that we can determine on our own to live with or live without. And so last week, as we continued on our walk through Colossians, and in particular right now, looking at Paul's statements about who Jesus is, and then in the coming weeks, what he's done, we said that Jesus is the head of the body, the church. That Jesus is the head of this people that he has given himself up for, and he has called out of darkness that we might proclaim his greatness. He is the head of this thing. He is the one who has brought us together. He is the one that is doing the work of changing us. He is the one that is using individuals in this room to help transform others in this room and outside of this room that they might know him and glorify him in all that they do. He is the one that has brought us together. He is the one that's determined from the foundation of the earth to start this thing. He is the one that has empowered this thing by his gospel and by his spirit. He is the one that is leading us in the direction that we're going and has called us on his mission to reflect his glory. He is the one that sits on top of this thing that we've called the church. And the thing that we did last week was to start the process of really trying to untangle the knots about the ways that we viewed the church. You know, the ways that we have tried to understand what the church is and the purpose of the church that allows us in our hearts and in our lives to practically live as if the church is something that's really just an accessory and a thing that we can be a part of or not. And we did it by trying to unpack some of these common misconceptions, some of these things that begin to belittle the people that Jesus gave himself up for in his body. And we said, you know, the church is first and foremost, it's not an event. You know, it's not a thing, an event that you come to that's like any other event that you get a ticket for, decide whether or not you want to go to, and that you come and you sit and you partake of what's happening. That the church is not an event, and it's not a building. It's not this place. It's not the building across the street. It's not any of the number of buildings that you see that have crosses or don't have crosses throughout this city. The church is not a structural thing that we go to or an event that we come and partake of. It's a people. It's an identity. It's a group of people that God purchased with the price of his own blood. It's something that we are. It's not something that we simply do or something that we go to. It's a sense of self as a communal people. You see, when you make a covenant with God by faith and you commit yourself to Jesus by trusting in who he is and what he has done, you're actually making two covenants. You're not just committing yourself to God by faith and trusting that what he has done in Jesus will satisfy the demands of God's holiness and forgive you of your sins and cleanse you of your unrighteousness. You're actually covenanting to be a part of God's people. You're actually covenanting to be a part of the people that God purchased for his own possession. So when you make a covenant with Jesus and you become a follower of Christ, you're actually making a covenant to be a part of his people. Something he cared so much for that he gave his own body up for. And I think we miss this a lot of times. And so last week we talked about what the church isn't. It's not an event that you come and look at and say, I'm not good enough to do anything there, so I just don't really have to be a part of. And it's not a building, not a place you go to. It's a people that we are, that Jesus is the head of. that Jesus is the one who has started, that he has established, that he is leading, that he is empowering, and that he has promised will continue to grow and transform this world. He has promised that by his own authority, and he said, I will build this thing. I'm not going to build it. We're not going to build it. He's going to build it. And as long as he remains the head and we remain focused on who he is, he'll build it. And the gates of hell won't overcome it. The problem becomes when we begin to think it's something other than it really is. And our focus gets distracted and we no longer focus on who he is and what he has done and what he's doing. We focus on being a better building or being a better event. There's always somebody better at both of those. You'll never be the best at that. There'll always be a bigger and prettier building or a better event. And when we spin our wheels focusing on all those things and we don't focus on who he is and him as the head and what he's doing and where he's going, we become pointless again. Irrelevant again. And we no longer sense that transcendence, that greatness of being called to something bigger than ourselves. We sit and we watch a television election and we wonder, what must that taste like to put our hope in something like that? Because there's something in us that says, I can't put it in this man. He's going to let those people down. He can't make everyone happy. But there's something about what's going on there. There's some sense of this people collectively feeling like there's something bigger than themselves going on. That there's something in your heart that connects to it. And we sit and we say, what's that going to feel like? When all along God has called us to something so much greater than any cultural move that our country could ever be a part of. He's called us to himself and he's called us to his mission to proclaim his glory, to be a part of who he is and what he's doing on this earth, to be the church. Now, what I want to do this week in just a little bit of the time that we actually have is I want to talk a little bit about what that means practically for Redemption Hill, where we are right now. If Jesus is the head of the church and we are his body and he has established this thing and is leading this thing and is empowering this thing, who are we and what do we do? Last week we talked about the church being like a body. That the body has members, that there are arms, there are hands, there are eyes, there are ears, there are legs, there are feet, there's head, there's members to your body. And just like there's members to your body, there's members in the church. And within those members, within those pieces, within the people that make up the church, there's a great deal of diversity. Last week we talked about the fact that there, not every part of your body is an ear, not every part of your body is an eye. How awful would it be if your body was made up of left feet? But there's diversity in the body. There's eyes that see and noses that smell and feet that walk and hands that grab and ears that hear. There's a great deal of diversity. And God has purposed in his plan to put these things together, not that they might simply be a diverse collection of members on a body, but that they might be interdependent upon one another and contribute to the health and the life and the vitality of the body. If one member is not doing what God has created for it to do, to see the health of the body and the purpose of the body established and move forward, then the body's not working the way it should. There are so many systems, and we talked about it last week, and pieces and details and intricacies to the way that God wove the body together, and it's no different with the church. He has called people to himself, and he has connected them to each other. And the way that we look at that is we look at it like the body, and there are these members. And almost 10 months ago, God began doing what he was doing in this church, and we had a meeting in the end of January, and we began to talk about what we felt like God was doing, what he was creating, what he was starting. And over a couple of weeks, we said the way that you actually connect to this thing, and especially in these early phases when there's so much that's happening, but there's nothing really solid and structural to grab onto, what we were hoping for and asking for people to commit for about 9 months to be a part of seeing this church established, to seeing some structure take place, to seeing some consistency take place, to seeing some things come together that we might be able to have a skeleton to this body, that it wouldn't just be a collection of bits and pieces that are shapeless and formless, but that a skeleton might be put in place. And we're coming up on the end of that 9 months, and the hope and really the prayer was on my part that we'd find ourselves at the end of this year, going into the end of 08, in a place that we could say, this is what God is doing. Take a look at what he's doing. in really 7 short months, because the first couple of months we were just over at Grace Covenant in the night. Sometimes it was informational, sometimes it was service, or it was weird. We came here in May. Since May, look at what he's doing. Look at what he's doing in your lives. Look at the way he's doing in the lives of others. Look at what he's doing in this place. And my prayer was we would find ourselves in a place that we could say at the end of the year, here's what God is doing. Now we're ready to actually be the body. And to be the body, it takes members. And we take this membership thing in this culture, and we tend to think of it more like Blockbuster or American Family or all these things that we choose to voluntarily join and give our dues to, and we can cancel and leave whenever we want. And it's this weird, crazy organization of things. And membership has very little value in our culture today. But when we talk about being a member of a church, we're not talking about it in the same sense we're talking about being a part of American Family or Blockbuster. We're talking about being a member like you have a member of the body. That there is a purpose, there is a plan that God has for who you are and why he's connected you to this. And if you're not a part of what God is doing here and you've committed yourself to it, then we're not healthy. We can't do what God has called us to do. And by his grace, I mean, it's absolutely nothing wise on my part or anybody else's part, because I could tell you 4 hours of things that I wish we'd done differently. But by his grace and what he's doing, we're at a place where we can actually move towards saying, this is who we are. This is what God is doing. God calling you to this place to become a part of this body, to give yourself to this body and to give yourself to him. Is this the place that you want to call home? We're going to begin as we go into the last part of this year to actually have a process for allowing you to become a member of this church. In 2 weeks in December, and the weeks are probably December 7th and December 14th, through the vehicle of our small groups, we're actually going to have a process for you to understand a little bit more about who we are in concrete detail, what God has called us to do, the things that we actually believe, for those of you who weren't here the first time we went through all of this, kind of the nuts and bolts of Redemption Hill. And then we're going to give you an opportunity to prayerfully commit yourselves to being a part of this body, to make a covenant with the members and other members and leaders of this church to be a part of this church. And we'll go over the expectations of that, because there are expectations. Like one of the reasons why the church has very little value in this culture, because there's been very little expectation for what it is. In the church, there's expectations for who you are and what God is calling you to do. There's expectations on me and other leaders on what we need to be doing for you and how together we lead you by serving you and equipping you to do what God has called you to do. And you lead this church by serving it with how he has equipped you and the gifts he's given you. So we'll talk about that. And prayerfully, we will ask that you pray through it and really try to discern and ask God for wisdom. Is this the place that he's calling you to be a part of, to commit yourself to give yourself to? So the 7th and the 14th, those weeks in our small groups, we'll go through those things. And if you aren't connected to one of our small groups, take a couple of weeks to get connected to one. And if you don't get connected to one or you miss it during those times, at 9 o'clock in here, or probably in one of these classrooms, we'll be walking through it. So for those who don't get connected to a group or miss their groups, Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, the 7th and the 14th, I think those are the Sundays, I'll walk through it in one of these classrooms. And by God's grace, we'll go into the new year with a body of people who are committed to what God is doing in this church and through this church in this city, and we'll pray and dream and give our lives and ourselves to be a part of what he's doing. We got at best probably from most of us 40 years to run with this thing. To take to heart what God is doing in his people and what he has called us to. Something that without his grace, without his power, without his direction, without his leading, we cannot do. There is no bigger mission to be a part of than to be the church. You can come up with however many tricky and cheeky ways you want to say it. There is nothing more significant than being a part of God's plan to bring redemption to a world that is groaning in anticipation for something to change. Most of us have about 40, 45 years to give ourselves to that and then pass it off to the next generation to see something go further than we ever could take it. As we start 09, we're going to be in a place where we can say, this is what I'm giving myself to. This is who I'm giving myself to, and we can run with it. That's coming in a little bit. That's part of what it means to be the church. to be a member of the church, a church, a part, a member that serves and is a part of how God is doing what he's doing. There's also a spine to this body. There's a backbone, and there's a structure to it. And if you follow the New Testament and the Apostle Paul, who wrote this letter to Colossians that we've been studying and wrote a significant portion of the other New Testament letters, you'll find that in all the churches that Paul started and all the places that God sent him and used him to establish new congregations of people that God was transforming and using to change cities, the one thing he did in all of those places, and you can't find an instance in the Bible where he did not do it, is that he made sure there were these people called elders put in place. That every church was to have elders who were to govern the church and primarily responsible to teach and equip the members of the church and the people in the church, in the gospel, in the implications of the gospel and the applications of the gospel for their life. You'll hear a lot about that in a little bit. Everywhere he went and every church he started, he said, we need to set in place these men who will govern and who will teach and who will lead God's people. You know, Jesus is the head of the church. He is the chief shepherd. But he has ordained and he has called men to be under-shepherds, those who take a primary responsibility for leading his people after him. You know, we've been in this interesting spot as we planted the church where technically I was the only one who technically filled that role here. And I was, as we started, the primary elder at Redemption Hill. And along with me, there were a collection of other pastors who have planted churches in our region who kind of served as elders who, as I had significant decisions to make or significant financial decisions or anything like that, that they kind of played this role of helping to govern and lead, but they're not here. And one of our greatest prayers, one of my greatest prayers as I started this thing, was to end this year not only in a place where we could have something and be something that we could call people to and say, this is what you can give yourself to, this is what God is doing, but that there would be a man or men that God had put in this place and had put on their hearts a desire to be a part of what he was doing to help govern and lead and teach and equip the people. And by God's grace, we actually have two. I didn't know as we started, sorry, I don't know what's gotten me, how this would play out. I wasn't sure. You know, I didn't know what God was going to do, and I did not know how God was going to work on people's hearts. But by his grace, we have two men who have served and have led and have continued to serve and continue to lead you. They have continued to play a role, an increasingly more significant role, in the life of this church and in taking the weight off of me to allow me to do other things that God has called me to do and to see this place equipped and established. And it was obvious over the course of a period of time, over the last probably 7-8 months, that God was putting them in a place to assume this responsibility in this church. And it's a massive responsibility. Elders are called to do two primary things, to govern the church, to oversee the body of Christ, to be able to look at the church and say, what's God doing? Where are we weak? Where do we need to grow? Where do we need, which direction do we need to head in? What things need to be reconciled? What things need to be fixed? What things do we need to encourage? How do we get there? Where are we going? They govern the church. They sit over the church. They watch for wolves among the sheep and shoot them. They protect the church. They make sure that there are no influences like are happening in Colossians, in this church in Colossae, that are coming in, that are tempting the church to believe something other than the sufficiency of Jesus. They're there to shoot the wolves and feed the sheep. They're primarily responsible for the teaching and equipping of the people of the church. They're to be able, and this is just one of these things we'll talk about. I'll go real quick. If you can't teach the Bible, you can't be an elder. Let me just put it this way. The primary responsibilities of an elder is to teach the scriptures and equip the church to do what God has called them to do and be what God has called them to be. It does not matter how great a leader you are wherever you are. It does not matter how nice you are wherever you are. You can be a great man, but if you cannot open the scriptures and teach people who God is, if someone comes to you and says, I'm not understanding how God is operating in my life in this area, and you can't open the Bible and walk them through it, you may be a great man, but you're not ready to be an elder. Primary responsibility of the elders is to govern the church and to feed and equip the sheep to do what God has called them to do. God's grace, he's given us two that are unbelievably qualified to do that. Along with those responsibilities to govern and feed and equip and protect and manage and lead, it's probably obvious, a significant amount of authority, power, for lack of a better word, responsibility. And so with this extraordinary measure of authority and power come an absolutely extraordinary set of qualifications. There is an extraordinary set of qualifications for the men that God is calling to be an elder. If you've got your Bibles, I want to run through them real quick, but then I want to tell you what we're going to do. I want to run through them real quick because I want you to see something about the men that God has called to this place to help lead us and equip us and teach us. And then I want to do something for you. This week, I took about an hour with each of them and interviewed them on video. We talked about what it means to be a pastor and an elder and what difference it means to them and how it makes them feel or what they think about that and their hopes and dreams for the church and for the city. And I didn't take it all, but I cut it down to bits and pieces. I'm going to play it for you because I want you to see these guys. I want you to hear from them. You've had a chance to hear from Chris and Ray at different times over the last 6 months, but I want you to hear their hearts for this church and this city and what they see God doing here. But if you've got your Bibles, look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. I just want you to see the absolutely significant list of qualifications that God puts on this role so that you can see what boundaries God places on this kind of authority and responsibility. And I want you to know something about me and about Chris and about Ray, and I want you to know something about any of the other men like yourselves, some of you, that God is going to call into this kind of responsibility in the coming years. We're not perfect. As we read through this, we're far from perfect, but there's one thing you should understand is that we're qualified. We're qualified by what God has called us to be and what he's called us to do. We're not perfect, and we're never looking for perfection, but we are looking for someone who's qualified. Listen to what he says. This saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of an overseer, he desires a noble task. First thing, you got to want to do it. I mean, you've got to want the responsibility. You've got to want the weight. You've got to want the pressure. You've got to want the expectation. Elders will stand before God one day and give an account for the souls of the church. All of you who call yourself to this place and find yourself members of this body, one day when I stand before Jesus and Ray stands before Jesus and Chris stands before Jesus and whoever else in time God calls to this position of this church stand before Jesus, we will give an account for your soul. You will have to answer to God for your standing in faith before him. We will answer for how we equipped you to live that out or didn't equip you to live that out. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wakes me up sometimes at night. I think about some of you. I know what you're doing, some of you. Good and bad. Naughty and nice. So you've got to want to do it. God puts a desire in the hearts of men that he's calling to this position. And you first thing is you've got to have a desire. You don't drag somebody kicking and screaming into the office of an elder. You don't take somebody who doesn't want that responsibility and doesn't want that pressure and doesn't want that calling and say, no, this is what you're going to do. That's not the right man for the position. You've got to want to do it. So there's got to be a desire, and he must be above reproach. He must be, one of my favorite teachers calls this the junk drawer of sin. If he doesn't specifically list out your particular sin in this list, this one's dumped in there somewhere. Above reproach, basically meaning any overt pattern or lifestyle that's contrary to a life of godliness, you've conquered. You've conquered. There is no overt pattern of sinfulness and disregard for who God is in your life. You're still not battling with your being mastered by your body and your appetites and your desires, and they still don't rule over you. You've conquered some of those overt things. We don't find you at the corner triangle adult shop on Friday nights outside every week. You know, you've mastered some of these overt things. Are you perfect? By no stretch of the imagination, but you've got control. You've got self-control, born of the Spirit. You'll see that's one of these things here, and you've overcome some of these things. And you've got to be above reproach, and the husband of one wife, that's a good one. what that basically means is you're a one-woman man. That's almost how it's technically can be translated. You're a one-woman man. Though you may be married to one wife, and technically that qualifies you, if your eyes wander, your heart wanders, your desires wander, your fantasy in your mind wanders continuously, and you put your hope and your expectation, your life in other women and other places, it's not for you yet. Not for you yet. Be a one-woman man, the husband of one wife, sober-minded. This is one of those that I don't think it's talked about a lot, and I'll have to blaze through the rest of them because we don't have time, because I want you to see these guys. I don't want to take up too much time, but sober-minded, I think, is one of the weakest areas ever taught about the qualifications and the necessities of a man who's called to be an elder. Sober-minded, and what he's talking about is really talking about having a healthy self-awareness of your strengths and weaknesses. Being sober-minded means you've grown to a sense of maturity with God in the gospel, in your relationship with Jesus, that you're aware of what you're good at, what you're not good at, where you're strong and where you're weak. You do not want a man in the role of an elder sitting around the table making decisions about the life of the church and the vision of the church and the mission of the church who has no idea who he is, or his sense of self is very different than the way the rest of the world sees him. You need a man who's sober-minded, who's gotten to the place of humility that's born of the gospel and a self-awareness that only comes as you recognize the sinfulness that's so inherent in who you are, but it rests in the greatness of the grace of God, and you can have a humility and an awareness of where you're good and where you're bad. The elder meetings, the decisions, those times are not places for self-discovery. That's not where that happens. You need to be sober-minded. A man needs to have a good measure of understanding of who he is, how God's wired him, where he's strong and where he's weak, and humble about that, honest about that. I think one of the things you'll see when you watch this, the honesty with both of these guys, it's one of the things I continually hope for and pray for and strive for in this church, that there's always an air of honesty and authenticity that's born out of understanding the gospel and an awareness that it's only as we can be honest and open about who we are and who God is and what he's doing that we can ever actually be real and ever actually see God begin to change us. And you'll see that both of these guys are incredibly sober-minded about who they are and how God's made them. But sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable. We're going to have to go through 1 Timothy next. I like talking about these. We don't have time, though. Hospitable. And this is a great one. This isn't making muffins. Hospitable is an awareness that your life is open to those who don't know Christ yet. That the people who don't know Jesus, who are not followers of Jesus, that those who have not been reconciled to God by Jesus are not your enemy. They're not people to keep away. They're not those that you aim at, but they're your people you open up your lives and open up your homes to. That they might be brought near to you and close to you, that you might reflect the realities of the gospel in your life to them. Hospitable means your life and your house and your family are open to those who don't know Christ. And you can't be an elder if your life is not open to those who don't know him, and it's not a characterization of who you are and how you operate. So able to teach, I think we hit that one. It doesn't mean you have to be able to stand up here in front of a large group of people and preach. You don't have to be called somewhere to go speak at a conference and, okay, he could be an elder. You just need to be able to open up your Bible and take people through the Bible and teach people the Bible. If you can't do that, you can't be an elder. And one of the responsibilities of the elders is to equip the church in an understanding of the scriptures. So as we do our jobs, you become more qualified. But if you can't teach the Bible, you can't be an elder. Not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome. You don't want a quarrelsome guy in the elder board. A guy who has to make his point all the time. It usually goes with not being sober-minded. Not a lover of money. You don't get into this for money. Trust me. He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. If someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. Unbelievable qualifications that I wish I could take time to unpack each of them. But the one when I thought about it this morning before we watched this video is that last one. He must be thought of well by outsiders. Those who are not part of the local body of the church, that are not part of Redemption Hill or the place where these elders call home, or are not part of the larger Christian community in this city, must think well of them. And, And here's what got me when I thought about these two guys, and hopefully it's okay. One of the things when I was reading through these things, and I thought as he's made this transition into this role as an elder at Redemption Hill and has left his position in advertising at Right Minds, one of the qualifications that is so important to this position is that you have to be well thought of by outsiders. This guy leaves his company to take this position and this opportunity that is not nearly as nice in some ways. And they ask him to stay, and they give him a desk. And they say, go do what God's called you to do, but don't leave us. So a couple days a week, he goes over to Right Minds just to be there because they like him, having him around. They give him a cube in the office when they're not able to pay their bills, and they want him to be there. People who are not part of this place, he did not walk around saying, I'm a pastor, I'm an elder, and think he's a Mormon or something. He didn't do any of that. He just did his job, and he was himself. And he was well-respected and well-liked by outsiders to such a degree that they asked him to stay. Go be what God's called you to be, but don't not be around here. And Ray, one of the things that's always caught me was as he was spending most of his time working with students at the University of Richmond, one of the staff at the University of Richmond have very differing views on a lot of things than we do. The understanding of the church and who God is kind of different. And it can pose a challenge to a lot of people to go and proclaim the true gospel, the message of Christ, and the reconciliation found in Christ to a very, very, very difficult generation, a very difficult environment, really working with people who don't agree with what you're doing. Though in the sense of the larger church, you're supposed to be on the same team, but your understanding of things may be different. But this guy goes and he's himself. He does what God calls him to do. He preaches the gospel and he begins to care for kids and care for the school to such a degree that he wants to see the best happen for this school, even though they may disagree on some things. And one of the staff there who was primarily responsible for him and what he was doing on the campus totally disagrees in some sense with what we're doing, but says, I've never seen a better reflection of someone who actually lives what they believe. And there's a true reflection of what you talk in such a way that they actually decide to financially support him. Completely disagree with him on a lot of things, but is so respected by those who would somewhat be outside of us that they're going to support him. They want him to just do what he does. I may not agree with you, but I've never seen anything quite like it. You actually believe this thing. It actually makes a difference in who you are, and it's making a difference in the lives of these kids. Here, we'll actually support you. You need to know we're not perfect. We're not perfect, but we're qualified. And God has called us to this position. He's called us to this privilege to be a part of this church and to help direct this church and to guide this church and to equip you, the church, to do what God's called you to do and be what God's called you to be, that in all things we might be the church ultimately and reflect his greatness to a city that desperately needs it. So as we wrap out this first kind of year, although it's technically not a year, by God's grace, we've actually gotten to a place where we can say, this is who we are. Now come join us. Be a part of what we're doing. God has called you to this place. Consider, is this the place that he's calling you to run with, to be the church, to see the gifts that he's given you refined, expanded, and used for his glory? And look, we've got some people who've been called here, and this is who's leading you, who's following you, or who's leading you and who you're following, who's looking to Jesus and following Jesus and saying, look, follow me as we follow him. I had hoped and prayed to be in this position by this time, but I wasn't really sure if it would happen. And so really for today, for me, it's more a sense of just amazement and thankfulness that this is the place that God is working in, that we're doing what he's called us to do, and he's bringing things together in a way that I couldn't have imagined.